Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Toby Milroy here, Chief Operating Officer for NAPA. And a few things really quick before we get started. Today's topic is a really, really, really important part of operating a highly successful professional school. And I know that, you know, for misunderstood reasons in our industry, the word selling has become an evil thing or a bad thing. And in reality, it's the opposite of that. But the topic for today's call, for today's discussion, is selling from the floor. How to sort of bridge the gap between the sales room and the classroom. How to get our instructors and our staff members always thinking about what's next for that student, or how to get that new intro into our regular program, or to get them to really buy into the concept of becoming a black belt. So that's the primary focus for our time today. A couple of quick notes for everybody. I'm relatively certain that most of you got an errant text message about an hour ago that said our call was in 15 minutes when in fact it was in 45 minutes. And this is actually part of a new system that we've been working on for a few months, especially in the schools. It's been hyper productive, and I wanted to kind of walk you through a few of the ways we're using that. But there was some technical glitch that is I as yet still don't understand. So I'm going to be working on that over the next couple of days and see if I can figure it out. I believe it's just a little scripting error with the time. So I think we've got it under control. But I apologize for that errant text message. But let me give you just a quick outline on how we're using that technology in our schools and how it's been most effective before we get to our primary topic. Now, we're also working on, by the way, a done-for-you solution for our NAMA members on how they can use text messaging solutions integrated with email, integrated with voice broadcasting and a few other technologies to make it very simple for you. Right now, the way we have it set up is it's really a hodgepodge of different programs working together, sort of although we had to do a lot of coding and a lot of scripting to get it all to sort of work. So I wouldn't wish that process on anyone. So we're trying to figure out how to sort of package a solution so that a school owner could use it effectively without having to go through all of the scripting and coding that we did. But basically how we're using it in schools most effectively is obviously as a marketing tool. When someone opts in onto a web page or watches a blog video or, you know, whatever the case may be, we're in many cases mining name, email, phone number so that one of our staff members, you know, a program director at one of the locations, can follow up with that person by phone. Now, in internet marketing, it is a truism that the more information you ask for on a squeeze page, the less, you know, it will diminish your response rate proportionally. However, what we've discovered is that if we have a real compelling video, a real compelling offer, that it doesn't diminish it by enough that it really causes that much of a concern for us, because really we want to follow up with them by phone. That's really our most effective methodology. Our most effective method to follow up with leads that occur online is by telephone. Have a live human being actually talk to them, right? So it's not, and frankly has never been, the most hyper efficient methodology to just follow up with them by email forever. Obviously, that's just one media of many that we should be using. So anyway, we're using text messaging as just an alternate media. So when they go through a squeeze page at a certain level, at a certain point in the relationship, we're also asking them for their mobile number to receive something of value, right? And in some cases, it's a special mobile coupon, it's, you know, whatever. You know, it just kind of depends on how they come across that page or how we drive them to that page. But so obviously as a marketing tool, we're using SMS messaging as a pretty good marketing tool, right? So it's just another media that we can follow up with folks. We send them a little YouTube video link. In their text message, they click it and they can watch the video right online. We send them to a mobile-friendly page. They can click it. They go right to the mobile-friendly page, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But something that's actually been even more effective for us, because of how a little bit hinky it is to collect mobile numbers up front, is as a renewal process. So as you're moving people through your upgrade program, this is another media we can get them to show up on a teleseminar, or we can get them to consume a webinar, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So just something to be thinking about, and we'll be talking more and more about that as time goes on, especially over the next few months, when as this technology becomes more integrated with you know, everything else that we're doing. So more information to come. So our primary focus today is, you know, as you saw in our email, is to sell in from the, you know, kind of bridging the gap between the enrollment conference or the trial student and what's happening on tour. Well, one of the things that that we see a lot in schools that are struggling and that are, you know, moving towards becoming a more professional business is there seems to be like this big brick wall between what's happening on the floor and what happens in the conference room, in the sales room. So, you know, the program director takes a student into the, you know, the enrollment conference, has a very deep and detailed conversation with the parent and the family about what their wants, needs, desires, and pains are, really understands, or tries to understand, you know, really why the parent is there, right? What it is that they're there to accomplish, what it is that they're there to solve. And then after the contract gets signed, they sort of throw them over the wall to the instructor, never having really, you know, filled the instructor in on what their objectives were, really never sort of connecting the dots, right? And then obviously when we're talking about an upgrade or a renewal process, some sort of an ascension model where they're moving to a higher level at some stage, that selling, that process begins at the first intro, but has to continue through to the classroom. So if you're a school, if you have a high-level program, a leadership program, a master club, a black belt club, whatever the case may be, you can't just do the initial sale in the conference room, throw them over the wall to the instructor, and then go back to them in 4 months or 3 months or 2 months or 2 weeks or 10 months, whatever the number is, and try to sell them something new, right? It's disconnected. It has to be a much more holistic process. So Master Oliver, we can hear you're with us. You got a little bit of noise on there. We wanted to kind of start this process. We want to start this conversation off with just kind of like connecting those dots, right? How connected the program director operations and the floor operations should be. What are the big like gaps that you see in that with your clients specifically?
Well, one of the things, it was a conversation that my last conversation with our guys in Houston. Who are running, you know, $1 million-a-year MMA school. But what I think has a tendency to happen at the high end, as you get higher and higher volume, is the program director, in other words, the person doing enrollment sales and presumably renewal sales, gets disconnected more and more from the floor, and you tend to make them like separate departments, if that makes sense. And you don't want to do that. The important thing is to have all of the staff working very closely together, monitoring all of the students, and certainly working very closely together, monitoring the students in the first introductory lessons in the first 3 to 6 months. Through the renewal process, it's important that the program director be constantly involved on the floor, be paying attention to people, be greeting, talking to each new student 3 or 4 times every class, touching them every class, knowing as many details about them, as well as for the instructor to be keeping the program director up to date on what their progress is and what his or her observations are and how all that works. And so on bigger operations, I see that tends to be the first thing that kind of falls apart. Is it's like in big companies, all of a sudden you create the like enrollment department and the renewal department and the teaching department, and it creates inefficiency, lower renewal numbers, and worse retention. And so you've got to fight that tendency to separate those people and those functions too much. At the lower end, I think it's a little different. You know, as you know, with group performance in your circle, what we tend to do pretty quickly is open the spigot and feed an awful lot of people in the pipeline. But then oftentimes what happens is all of a sudden when I have 10 times more intro traffic or enrollment traffic than I've ever had in my life, is I get so happy to have them that I forget that the actual enrollment conference and enrollment was just the first step in having a committed long-term student who's happy to be training to Black Belt and beyond. So on a smaller level, as schools start to grow, I think what has a tendency to happen is we open the spigot, show them how to feed a ton of people in. But then we've got to, the ones we're working with personally, we've got to look at their numbers and make sure that now 75, 80, 85, 90% of the people who've enrolled very quickly, within 2 weeks to 2 months, are now renewed into the next level program and preferably the highest level program. And as we tell people, the number one thing to ensure retention is to renew them, because anybody who doesn't renew is going to drop out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let's go back to kind of do this a little bit linearly too. So one of the things that you just described is what I mentioned at the beginning of the call today too, is you really want to avoid this disconnect. And it is really, really, really easy for that to happen, especially when you have two staff members, right, or more. When one guy kind of like is in charge of, and usually it's the owner-operator, is in charge of doing the enrollment, and then you have a full-time instructor, or even in worst cases, a few part-time instructors that are all disconnected as well, right? So we really have to think about this thing just from a paradigm as a holistic system, one system, not four different connected, disconnected parts, but one system. And so let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to someone comes in for an introductory lesson. Well, obviously, the program director's mission is to find out what their wants, needs, pains, and desires are, right? What they're there to solve, what they're there to try to accomplish. So once they enroll, they're telling us, yes, I believe you. I believe that your program can solve these problems. Now, here's where the disconnect comes in many, many, many cases. They throw the student over the wall to the instructor. Now, how does the instructor know? How does he know what to focus on? How does he know what to monitor? What would you say to a school owner? How do they connect those two systems together?
Well, you alluded to something there that's vitally important, and it's a staffing issue that a lot of people get wrong. Is what if you don't have full-time people, and the part-timers especially. Some of them are extremely well-meaning. They may be a very high-level talent, martial arts-wise, athletically, maybe even they're engaging instructors. But if you don't have people who are really focused on student development, student quality, and the long-term outcomes of the school, I've talked to people recently running fairly big schools, but they have five instructors, and one instructor teaches on Monday, another instructor teaches on Tuesday, another instructor teaches on Wednesday. Or you have two that are on 3 days a week. See, that's long-term recipe for disaster. And doesn't mean they're not good assistant instructors, but there have to be really full-time focused people developing those students, or else it doesn't work. And the second thing is as you talked about directly, is the throwing them over the wall syndrome. Is I see a lot of schools that are doing fairly well, but it's intro one, intro two, do the enrollment, give them a class schedule, circle the times, and then say, okay, you're going to be coming Tuesday, Thursday. Hopefully, you're coming back on Thursday, and then there's no follow up. And we teach people call and confirm that next lesson as program director. Greet them at the front door. Walk them through their ID card. Walk them through the class process. Formally reintroduce them to the instructor and make sure that they're comfortable in the school environment. Formally introduce the parent to all of the other parents so that they're comfortable in the school environment. And then, the fourth time, I would call them again and I'd tell them, look, I'm not going to bug you every time. I just want to make sure you get started off smoothly. And if there's any time you're not going to be able to make it into a class or one thing or another, let me know ahead of time. And want to make sure that, you know, after attending these couple classes, that Tuesday, Thursday schedule was good for you or whatever it was. So it's so important to have that smooth transition, as well as the conversation with the instructor behind the scenes of, you know, let me explain Joey. You know, parents are divorced, there was a little sexual molestation, or there was a little crisis at school, or there was a little concern about whatever it might be. You know, or you know, Joey's a straight A student, but he's not an athlete, and they're concerned about, you know, whatever it is they're particularly interested in. Is you've got to have that conversation with the instructor. You know, one of the things, Toby, to stay on that track is that, you know, conversations I've had with other people, and one of the things we've always tried to introduce and stay consistent with Mile High Karate was taking little photographs. That's why, you know, I hate to sound like a dinosaur, but I love those little Kodak cameras that, you know, digital cameras have replaced. Because frankly, digital is harder to do. But take a picture with every student and their parents on the way in the door, and then use them as flashcards for the first couple months with everybody on staff to make sure every assistant instructor and every full-time person knows everybody's names. And then as you do that, talk about different needs and benefits and wants and desires of each of those students so that everybody is really in tune with what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. That's so important that, you know, I always remember my Monday morning meetings, and we used to have it divided up into, you know, 15-minute segments, and one of those segments was exactly that. Take all the white, gold, and orange belt cards, which are like, you know, the attendance cards, and either we had printed a little photo on there or we had a little photo attached. And that was the drill. The drill was, you know, what's the name? Obviously, we do the kid's name, but what's the family's name? Who brings them to class? Who is the grandmother? You know, what's their story? What do they want? You know, why are they here? And I got to tell you something. More than anything with my staff, my personal staff, I had a lot of resistance to revolutionizing my programs. Right? I had a lot of resistance from the staff on raising prices, on increasing the psychological level of commitment of the student, and delivering higher quality stuff. See, the staff always defaulted back to what I taught them, which was that the most value we could offer was kicking and punching, right? So when I went through that revolution in my own mind, it took them longer, right? They needed to build their confidence in that concept over time. And one of the things that it really was enlightening to them, the staff member, was going through the photographs of everyone who enrolled, you know, the little attendance cards, and the instructor actually realizing what it was that they were there for. Almost never will you show one of them the photograph of a new white belt, and it says, the parents just want them to kick and punch, right? It's never that. It's always a bigger problem that you're trying to solve, and that was a huge mindset shift for my staff members. When they started seeing these cards over and over and over and over again, and it was this student here because he has a little bit of ADHD and he really needs help with his focus. This student needs help with his self-confidence. He's getting picked on at school and his self-esteem has suffered. This student's teacher said that he needed help kind of asserting himself in class. He would never raise his hand because he never thinks he can have the right answer, right? When they start hearing those stories and seeing that progress in those students, they start to realize the true and tremendous value you're delivering to the student, right? So just as a system, I think that system that you mentioned is a hugely valuable system, right? So let's take the next step. So, and in fact, I think I would submit one more concept for everyone to consider. I think there's a brick wall between the program director, the sales office, and the floor in many, 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 many schools. But then I think there's another brick wall. I think that there's a brick wall right at the front door. And when a student enrolls, we communicate with them when they show up for class, but never outside of that, right? They never get any communication they never get touched outside of the school. And I think that's a huge opportunity for what we're talking about today. Persuading them, selling them on the idea of being a black belt long term, selling them on the idea of renewing into a higher level program, selling them on the idea of being a student forever, of really mastering something rather than just participating in something for 3 months like a sport. And obviously outside the school, we have tremendous opportunity to do that with today's technology. Obviously, there's email, and we can send them little YouTube videos, and we can, you know, send them things like our Thinking of You program, where it's designed specifically for the benefit that they were looking for. You know, what if I had two or three little YouTube videos that teach lessons specifically about focus, specifically about self-esteem, specifically about children with ADHD, and any student who fit into that category would receive those videos over the first 3 or 4 weeks of their life as a student, you know, those types of things. So we call that system the Thinking of You process. You guys have all, you know, many of our guys have heard about that at one of our at our live events. But, you know, communicating with them outside of the school, I think, is in addition, vitally important. Anything that you'd add to that, Mr. Oliver, before we move forward to renewal?
Well, yeah, I mean, we could go on this topic forever, but I just, as you know, came off our Mile High Karate staff training call, and one of the things that we were doing is walking through our school in Fresno's numbers, and let me give you 2 points of observation of what I was talking to all of our guys about from a retention standpoint is. You know, we always like to track how many came in this week, how many have been gone for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And, you know, my benchmark has always been if it gets over 10% gone for a week, 2% gone for 2 weeks, and over 1% gone for 3 weeks, then I'm panicked. And even 1% gone for 3 weeks translates to 4% monthly dropout rate.
Right.
And, you know, in that school, it's a school that's got about 247 active students, you know, by the end of the year going to be an $80,000 a month school. This last month, I think, was 44,000 I think, 28 enrollments. But it reminded me of a story from Keith Hafner, and as you know, I just did a little interview with Buzz Durkin that we'll share with everybody in the coming months. But in his case, he does like 5 enrollments a month and has 280 active students. And the Keith Hafner story was, I remember I was in his little conference room one time and, you know, looking around his desk, and they had the little flashcards we talked about of everybody who had just enrolled. But he had one of those, like, conference room deals that you see with this a big oak thing on the wall, and you open it up, and there's a bulletin board and a whiteboard and so forth. And I opened it up, and there was a picture of about 10 different of the pictures up there. And I said to him, okay, what are those pictures? He goes, that's everybody who's dropped out in the last couple of months that I'm pissed off about. And he says, that's up there for our staff meetings. And it was interesting in having the conversation is, he says, so many times we turn people into numbers, which is imperative to have a sense of where everything's at. But we've also got to keep them humanized. And we've got to be having the conversation with our students constantly about, you know, what that person's trying to accomplish and why we've made the commitment to get them to black belt and why we're letting them down if we let them fade away and why it's a win-win if we keep them in class and it's a lose-lose if they bail out of class. And so many times I think our staff starts to think that us trying to strong-arm them or talk them back into coming to class is about our benefit, not about the student benefit. But if we sit down and realize all of the things that we've got now, the process of training the black belt, and turn it around and say, what would have happened if my instructor at that point of inflection had let me drop out, had not given me the concern and the interest, and just as I were just talking, and he had that happen very early on in his training, where he had been out for baseball and intended to get back in, and his instructors kept bugging him. That was the Woolley brothers back in Texas many years ago. And I had the same thing. I had two different examples. One was, you know, dropped out for 2 or 3 months, and my instructor was constantly pinging on me and trying to get me back in class. Another time at a different school, won't mention any names, but I had been gone for a couple of months, and the first time we heard from the school was when they were following up on the payment.
Right.
And it's you know, the first time you hear from the instructor is when they haven't gotten paid on time. It sure gives you a perspective of what their interest is, even if it's in you know, even if it's unfair.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And there is again, I think we kind of already went through that process. But again, I think humanizing it is super important. Benefitizing, you know, having the staff really understand what they're trying to accomplish is huge for their paradigm. And what you're saying is like so common. I just, you know, we have lots and lots of new peak performer members in our one-on-one coaching program now, in our peak performer program over the last few months. And almost every new person who is moving into that sort of like, I'm going to revolutionize my business mindset, right? Almost everybody who moves into that, almost every time I talk, we end up analyzing that they're doing almost nothing to follow up with their students once they enroll. After the contract, after the ink is dry, as long as they show up for class, they're going to teach good lessons, right? But that's it. And it's important but not adequate, right?
Yeah.
It's just one small piece of the thing. And again, you know, following up with them when they're out of class is like the baseline. If you're not doing at least that, right, that's a huge opportunity. But what about following up with them when they, you know, have accomplished something significant in their elementary school or in their baseball team or, you know, those types of things? You know, and we you know, I've always had really simple systems for managing that type of thing. You know, obviously we have the attitude stripe system where, you know, on the right side of the belt is their physical stripes and on the left side of their belt is their attitude stripes. And we would always make sure that we constantly call out and reward students for things that they're doing outside of the martial arts classroom, too. So if they made AD honor roll or if they, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, at the lower levels especially, at the higher levels it's much more difficult to accomplish those attitude stripes, but at the lower levels, white belts, gold belts, if they have a straight A report card, we'll give them an attitude stripe for every A that they earned. If they, you know, there's very simple things that you can do in your school as a process, as a system that really help reinforce all those things, right? And once you kind of start that ball rolling, the students start feeding the system. So if they know that this is a holistic program, that this is something that will help reinforce their, let's say, positive behavior, but, you know, let's just use that as an example, outside of the classroom, and they're going to be publicly rewarded for that in front of their classmates by their martial arts instructor, which is like, you know, Superman, right? Then that system feeds itself, and you'll have people bringing you their report cards, bringing you their positive accomplishments outside the classroom, and then you have the opportunity to reinforce that. If you don't have a system like that in place, how do you know? How do you know that the kid made straight A's this year? How do you know that he earned the perfect attendance award, right? I mean, you have to depend on them to come to you with that information. Or, which is really the answer, you have to have a really robust communication process back and forth with your students. So, but anyway, I think that's really useful. I think it's exactly right. So let's talk about...
Anchor in two things you just said, just for a second, is Buzz Durgan's story, which I thought was really, you know, enlightening for somebody who's not thinking about it this way. He carries a little notebook in his uniform and has lots of conversations with students and parents and makes little notes. And he had two examples that he used that I thought were both great. Is one was a parent comes in and has just bought a new used car. And so Buzz asked to go for a ride and, you know, and oohs and ahs over the whatever it was. But then the next day, sends that little personal note and buys a $25, you know, Conoco or whatever gasoline card and sends it to him and says, congratulations on your new, I forget what it was, Mustang. And I'm sure you're going to have many, you know, many fun years in that new toy. Another example he used was mom is explaining about the sibling who's not even a student. And about how he won an award in soccer or whatever. And the sibling, again, who's not a student, same night, little personal note going out in the six-year-old's name, who's proud of their accomplishments in soccer leagues, who's not a martial arts student yet, gets a little personal note of congratulations for your great accomplishments in soccer. We love working with your family. You know, too powerful, simple, but most people don't have a little notebook in their uniform and sit down and force themselves to do five or seven cards a night. Something else you mentioned, Toby, is our peak performers group, and I should welcome on this call Mike Nestor in Texas, who's on the fast track, I think, to be a $40,000 a month school in the next 6 or 8 months here. He's suburban Dallas, so right outside of Dallas, and also Ronnie Moore in Topeka, Kansas, who's Mike has a long background in Taekwondo and as an international ISKA competitor and so forth, but a well-established school with about 140 students right now, and Ronnie Moore is a Shore and Roost stylist with a well-established school in Topeka. And Ronnie's, I think, on the fast track here to be a $30,000 a month school by the end of the year. So let's welcome both the peak performers. And Toby, as you know, you and I have been both working on our schedule for next year. One of the things that I hope to do is make it a combination of expanding everybody's abundance mentality and also their leadership training. And we're looking at a trip to West Point or the Air Force Academy, one of the service cadet academies, possibly West Point, and also looking at a couple of other stops that'll help expand everybody's sense of abundance. So I think it's going to be very exciting for the rest of the year and the new year for all of our new peak performers and our existing Inner Circle members.
Yeah, you know, since you mentioned it, you know, one of the things that we discovered, and really it was more of a shock to me than maybe it was to you, but one of the things that we've learned over this, especially the last, let's say, 24 months, is that there are all sorts of members who have been in NATMA forever, who have been members of NATMA for 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, 13 years, 17 years, right? And that have been getting the materials and that have been, you know, getting the material on the website, watching webinars, doing all this stuff for years and years and years and years, but still are just, there's a disconnect, right? They have specific questions that just haven't been able to be answered or just needed to get over that one obstacle that is kind of keeping them from accelerating their growth to the next level. And it's been surprising to me that there are so many. There are so many people who have kind of been in the loop for so long, but there's still just some disconnects. And that's what we've been really effective at kind of solving in those types of one-on-one coaching environments, performers inner circle types of environment, is really drilling down individual school and sort of helping you build those systems for your individual curriculum, your individual process, those types of things. So it's really been a little bit surprising for me.
Well, you know, it was a shock to me. And as you know, in these financial power seminars, we've had, I don't know what it is, maybe 160 school owners, and I committed myself to do one-on-ones with them and committed to do one-on-ones with all of our members. And we're just kind of kicking that off with the current members. But, you know, not to throw just us under the bus, I talked to 10, 15-year EFC clients, 10, 15-year Maya, Mata clients. I talked to schools that are members of everything. And they all had the same problem. And I know you and I talked, and I lamented and twined and tried to diagnose with Bill Clark and Hafner and Buzz Durkin and Greg Tierney and Jeff Smith and several others, all of whom are, you know, millionaires from any martial arts school, you know, what the missing link was, and came up with the analogy, I think, is, see, if you're running a martial arts school, you've had the experience at least once where, you know, some kid came in and he wants to train, tells you how accomplished he is and how much he's studied and all the stuff he's learned. And then you find out that he's essentially self-taught, right? Maybe he had a high school or college buddy who was a green belt, and then he subscribed to Black Belt Magazine, Inside Kung Fu, and ordered a bunch of DVDs and has been training himself for a couple years after getting all kinds of DVDs and CDs and magazines and books on martial arts. You know, I know what I've always done appropriately is stick them right in the white belt class because they don't know squat. And I think school owners, truthfully, are the same way. Is I look back to my development as a martial artist, and there were some key components. Now, one component was having good knowledge. And, you know, Junior wrote books on the forums that I found very useful. And we had, you know, some old films. And I used to watch Pat Worley fight and mimic him. But really, wasn't it a combination of a couple things? It was having a sincere instructor who had been there, done that, looking over your shoulder, some cases patting you on the back, other cases kicking you in the butt, and many times, I remember one time I had been kind of on my own for a few months and then went to Washington, and Jeff Smith immediately diagnosed a couple of minor tweaks that were major fixes in my on my kicks. And it's something I never would have caught on my own, but because of his stature and capability and knowledge, he diagnosed it immediately. And so one element of really having the achievement is not about knowledge, it's about having the instructor who's been there, done that, looking over your shoulder, patting in the back, kicking in the butt, and really looking at what's going on and making a diagnosis you probably couldn't see yourself. The second thing, and I can't emphasize, I think, how important it was to me, is the peer group of other students. You know, the ones that you're constantly sparring with, and you're competing for who's going to, you know, score on the other guy, and you're watching the person next to you who's having trouble with the kick, and you've mastered it, or you're having trouble and they've mastered it, and you're pushing each other along, competing to see who has the best split or who can, you know, whatever it might be. But, you know, the Think and Grow Rich thing is about the mastermind effect, right? It's having a mastermind peer group. But I think it goes even beyond that. It's having a social group, professional group of winners that is overseen by a competent teacher that's helping you move forward. And I think that's what's been missing with so many school owners. I know I was lamenting to you, whining to you, about why all these people in coaching had gone from 12,000 a month to 38,000 a month, or 17,000 a month, 50,000 a month, or in your case, from 17,000 a month, 40,000 a month, and done it quickly. Best case, maybe 90 days, worst case, 9 to 12 months. And people who had a comparable level of stuff that had been dropped on them, DVDs, CDs, websites, teleconferences, but hadn't had that personal touch and that personal peer group, just weren't making the kind of progress. And I think that's the diagnosis, is it's what we've created in Peak Performers Inner Circle that gets missing, I think, across, you know, all the other organizations, is having that guidance.
Yeah, again, it's what we're talking about today. It's a holistic approach. It's kind of treating the whole patient rather than just kind of treating one symptom as part of it. And so if we're going to take the next step, right, like let's say we're going to take the next step in this, like, selling from the floor concept, right? So now we're talking about a student is enrolled, or in our case, this is enrolled, right? Now what do we have to be doing on the floor? Well, let me back up a half a step. You mentioned sort of the notepad and the uniform and the constantly taking temperature of the student and what their needs are and where they are exactly today. And I know some school owners are going to say, man, that's a lot of work. How am I going to write all these cards? How am I going to do all this stuff? Well, I've always been about how do I systemize this stuff, because in my school I was overseeing three locations, and I knew that I would never be able to do it all on my own, right? I knew that I was never going to be in any one location every day, teaching every class, doing all this stuff. So I was always kind of focused on how do I build a system to accomplish this. And just a really simple system that I'm sure almost all of our listeners today have some kind of a leadership team or some type of a junior instructor or whatever the case may be. And my mandate always had been, every class that you assist in, you have to choose one, sometimes it's two, but at least one student that class that you're going to give a little handwritten good job note to, right? And you know, and I'll tell you two different versions of this, by the way, which technology is catching up with us, and it's actually making a better opportunity. But one is just, a handwritten little card. We have them sitting up at the front desk. Every assistant instructor who assists in class, they know when they walk into class that they're looking for one student today who is going to get a good job note, right? They're looking for someone who's made progress, who's made an improvement, or who's performing outstandingly. Now, you want to make sure that you have some kind of a system in place so that the same kid doesn't keep getting them every day, right? Because, again, if it's an assistant instructor, he may not know who got one yesterday or the day before, so we just put a little tick on their attendance card, right? So we have a little box, you know, sectioned off on everybody's attendance card for good job notes, and it's, you know, encrypted, so no one knows what it is, right? It's just a little thing that says, you know, GG, whatever, if you're gay, and they put a little tick. And then they just handwrite a little card. It's a pre-printed postcard. All they do is put a little message on the back, stick a stamp on it. It's a done deal. And we just make sure that they do that before they leave for the day. That's what they have. It's part of teaching a class. So that's one example. Now, with today's technology,
let me interrupt just a second, if you don't mind.
Please.
Yes. There's two things real quick. And something you said in there I think is very accurate. I mean, you know, all was very accurate, but something that clicks immediately is, while people think this is a lot of work, right? Mm-hmm. Let's analyze that statement, and you're right. I think that's the initial reaction of many instructors. But I got to tell you, it's a lot less work to keep 10 students from dropping out than it is to go get 10 more. And you've got to keep that in mind, because, you know, I know how hard it is to go out in a movie theater and make appointments. And I know how hard it is to teach a first intro and a second intro in an enrollment conference and deal with, you know, a chunk of them saying no and rejecting you. And I know how hard it is to put a person on the phone doing follow-up on lead calls, trying to get them in. I mean, you can go through the list. And if it's not hard, it's expensive. You know, as you know, I've spent, you know, $250,000, $500,000 or more a year in advertising to drive people in the front door. It's a heck of a lot cheaper and a heck of a lot less effort by a factor of at least 10, probably by a factor of 100, to keep them from dropping out than it is to go get a new one. And so anytime you start to think that it's a lot of work, you've got to keep that perspective in mind. I think it's a moral issue as well. Is, are we really doing what we promised our students, or are we just, you know, is it just hype, marketing and sales hype?
That's where I was going to go, by the way. From just a paradigm standpoint, my objective always was, I didn't want anybody ever to walk onto the floor who thought that all they were there to do was teach somebody a better psychic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just wanted to do everything I could to disabuse them of that. I never wanted that to even be an option for them. You know what I mean?
Well, and that was my point, Zirkin's point. I mean, is ultimately the difficult thing about this is it's a culture that you have to develop.
Right.
And if you develop the culture, the systems are easy. If you don't develop the culture, the systems are almost impossible to keep in place.
Exactly.
Because I've had, you know, across multiple locations, I've had the guy who, frankly, could care less. I mean, and, you know, you don't know it until you know it, right? But frankly, could have cared less about student progress, just wanted the check. And the person, you know, male or female, who is extremely sincere. And the one that's insincere, you give them tools like you're talking about, and they expand upon them. And the one that's insincere, you give them tools that you're talking about, and they go put a checklist so that you're not going to yell at them. But in practical terms, they resist and or pretend to comply. So you've got to have that culture in your school of sincere interest and the culture of a sincere contribution to the community. And frankly, an awful lot of times, you've got to fire the cancerous athletes and get the sincere teachers. In order for your school to develop properly.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, so then as we're moving kind of clearly through the program, now we've got a student enrolled and we've got the staff engaged, right? We're going to personalize this program for them. We're going to make sure that everybody on our team knows why they're there, so that when Johnny comes to class, it's not just about teaching Chun-Ji, right? But it's about teaching Chun-Ji, and that Johnny understands why, and by the way, Johnny's parents understand why mastering these movements is designed to help him with his focus and designed to improve his level of self-confidence, right? Those types of things. So now we have a secondary objective. We have an objective to, you know, keep the student forever, but we also have an objective to move that student into a higher level program. Maybe it's a leadership team, maybe it's a master club, whatever your mechanism is in your school. And in our paradigm, it's the core program in the school. The focus and the purpose of the school is to graduate leaders, right? To graduate people who are going to be, you know, huge contributors to society. So now we have another process, right? Now we have to have every instructor on the floor connected with what that student has to, you know, what the mission for that student is, ascending that student to the next level. So where do we start with that? That's kind of like a big jump for a lot of folks that are in the moving into a professionalized school model, right? Where do we start with that with the staff?
But let's start with a parenthetical comment, which is, this is true whether you're talking about 25-year-old adult women, 50-year-old adult women, 30-year-old adult men. This is true whether you're teaching Taekwondo, teaching little ninjas Taekwondo, or whether you're teaching a children's program based on Shorin Ryu, or whether you're teaching an adult Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program or MMA program. And I think that a fair number of instructors sense that those are different.
They've in fact been misled to believe that they're different. The whole kind of trend in the industry toward an age, thinking that there's a difference between how we should treat the student as far as program structure goes, depending on age, I think is a fallacy. We certainly have to deliver the lesson to a 4-year-old a little differently than we deliver it to an 11-year-old, right? Certainly. But the process shouldn't be any different. It doesn't have to be any different.
No. Well, and the student's desired outcome, frankly, isn't different. And you may discuss it differently with a 32-year-old man and with a 40-year-old woman versus a 4-year-old child and their parents and a 9-year-old child and their parents. But the desired outcome is the same. And the process for getting them to the desired outcome is the same. And it's not, see, the 32-year-old adult male who you're putting into, an MMA program or a Muay Thai program or a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program, they're not there to get punched in the nose or to learn the best fighting skills, although you may think they are. They're there for confidence, discipline, focus, for fitness, for a better feeling of self-worth and greater self-efficacy, the ability to perform better at work and in their other athletic endeavors and in their other personal endeavors. Same as the parent is there for the 7-year-old. And so, I think as an aside, it's important to note that is, I think some people hear what we're talking about as a kid thing, and it's not a kid thing. It's a every martial arts student in a martial arts school thing. And if you move away from that, what you're doing is you're positioning yourself as being worth $75 a month versus positioning yourself as being worth $1,000 a month. Because what they're willing to pay for just physical training is much different than what they're willing to pay for a more holistic environment. And by the way, this is true of the Navy SEALs, it's true of West Point, it's true of the Marines. They're not training them in the technical, martial skills only. They're training them in mindset and in confidence and in self-reliance. So it's a universal there. But back to specifically the selling from the floor concept is, I think the first thing is mindset. If you put your child in a very expensive, let's say it's a $30,000 a year, private, most exclusive high school in town, what do you want that exclusive high school to do? Well, don't you want them to prep your child for Harvard, MIT, Stanford, or West Point, right? And your mindset about your school and about your beginning program is that's exactly what it is your mission with white belts is to prep them for and let them qualify to train to black belt. And all of the language you use on the floor should be wrapped around that. And at the simplest level, it's what Master Clark was talking to him recently, it's called, what was it, Black Belt a Minute. Referencing from the APA organization, referencing, being a black belt and accomplishing a black belt and acting like a black belt and just using that terminology throughout the class. Very important. The other is truly teaching them about why they should set the goal. And, I mean, doing this in class. I mean, sitting them down and teaching them goal setting and giving them a little sheet. We give them a little sheet that was semi-hijacked from Zig Ziglar and turned into a how to set your goal to be a black belt and beyond sheet that we teach them how to do in white belt class. So, you know, here's what being a goal of being a black belt is all about. Here's how long it takes. Here's what you'll achieve in the process. Here's the stumbling blocks you may encounter. Here's the action steps you need to take immediately. Here's the long-term action steps. Here's your target date. Here's a photo of you wearing a black belt as a visualization tool. Here's you wearing a black belt in class for 3 weeks as a visualization tool. All of those things are essential in order to, again, replicate what the most expensive prep school in a I was just at the Air Force Academy, and the Air Force Academy has a prep school. I didn't know that before. But they have a prep school on campus of high school kids who want to get into West Point. And, you know, the reason that parents are paying whatever they're paying for that, I don't know what it is with the implied promise that their child will qualify for that military academy.
Yeah, actually, all the branches have that. I was actually in the Navy's version of that for 4 years when I was going through high school. So
yeah.
We did it in the summertime. It's really an interesting process, by the way. And which, by the way, this is connected, but some may perceive this as a tangent. In this process, we've talked a little bit about how to sort of systemize this stuff inside the school. And in some cases, we use mechanisms like, you know, the stripe on the belt or the patch on the uniform or the star or whatever it may be, right? And I think there's two things about that, but I was chatting with enough school owners who have a sort of a skewed belief about that. They think that in some cases, you know, publicly rewarding these types of things and you know, especially physically on the uniform, on the belt, whatever the case may be, is like pandering, or it's sort of insulting to the student's intelligence, or students won't, you know, comply, or they won't work hard to earn that next stripe. They just think it's a trinket or whatever, right? Well, while I agree you don't want to create a culture that people behave because they know that they're going to be rewarded for it, right? There definitely is a way to deliver that in a more effective way. But if you think that, go ahead.
Let me say what you just said a little differently. And this is addressed in that great book that we use, West Point Way of Leadership, mm-hmm. is you have to give a new student lots of rewards and wean them off of needing rewards for behavior.
Right.
So we've got to have, I like to think of it as first year, second year, third year, fourth year. In the first year, they need a lot of rewards because you've got to catch them doing something right a lot. And you've got to have them on a pedestal a lot. The second year, you need quite a bit of it, and by the time they're brown or black belt, they should need very little of it to maintain their enthusiasm. And I think that's the way to think about it, is you've got to treat them, again, no matter what their age. What does a kindergartner need to be excited about elementary school? What does a first grader need versus what does a student at Harvard need? Well, you know, as a white belt, they're not a student at Harvard. That as a white belt, they're a kindergartner. And you've got to structure programs and pieces in place for it to have that kind of transition.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was saying. You know, you don't want to be in the perception of you know, treating a 13-year-old brown belt like he's a 4-year-old little ninja, right? But let me finish that brainwave for just a moment. If you think that people don't want to perform to earn the little baubles like that, you're absolutely wrong. I mean, look at what we go through to get a stripe on our black belt, right? To get that next degree of black belt, to get that, and it's not about the stripe on the black belt. It's about what it means to us. It's about the recognition. It's about we see that we've accomplished something significant, and this is just a representation of it. Also, I would challenge you to look at the military. I mean, look at a dress uniform of an officer. This is a high-level college graduate, probably postgraduate in many cases, who, a four-star general has a chest full of medals, right? Well, the guy didn't put himself in harm's way to get the medal, but it's certainly a representation of what he's accomplished, right? And it's certainly something that human beings need that recognition, and in fact, when they deserve it, we do them a disservice to not recognize it, right? So I think that's just a little bit of a paradigm that's counterproductive in this process. Now, again, when we're talking about moving that student to the next level up, they have to feel competent in what they're doing. You can't move someone to a higher level programmer. They will not willingly seek you out to move to a higher level program if they feel like in the program they're already in, they're overwhelmed, and that they're not being successful, and that they can't be successful in what they're already doing. So you've got to make sure that they know that they're making progress. It's not about watering down your program so that everybody can make progress. It's about making sure that those who are making progress know it. In many cases, they won't, even if they are, right? In many cases, the typical student, or even the excellent student and their family, maybe they are making progress. Maybe he is working on his self-confidence. Maybe he is standing straighter. Maybe he is getting higher, whatever the case may be. But they only see incremental progress. It's kind of like if you've been with somebody who loses a lot of weight, right? Well, if you're with them every day, you don't notice it so much. But if you see them once, and then you see them, 3 months later, and they've lost 30 pounds, oh, my God, it's a world of difference, right? And that's how the parents are. That's how, in many cases, we are. We sometimes don't see that small incremental progress every day, so we've got to make sure that we reinforce the progress that they are actually making and make sure that it's public and displayed to them, right, so that they can see that every day. So that's a huge piece of selling from the floor. Your instructors have to be intimately in touch with that. They have to be looking for that every day. They have to know, they have to, if you went to your instructors and asked them about all your brown belts and said, okay, everybody's front kick, exactly how high is everybody's front kick? They have to be able to tell you, well, Johnny kicks about eye level, Susie kicks, way over her head. They have to know that stuff. But what about the other areas of their life? Why are they really enrolled? Go back to that question. How is Johnny doing with his focus? How's he doing with his self-esteem? What is he doing outside of the martial arts classroom that could help reinforce that he is making progress, or that indicates to us he's making progress, right? So I think just as a paradigm, your instructors have to always be looking for that. And identifying all that rewards the behavior that you want to see, reinforces the behavior that you want to see. It also helps them believe that they're making progress. And maybe now they're starting to think about what's next. They're thinking about, how do I now move to a higher level? I'm getting this. I feel good with this. I'm getting what I was promised, right? I'm accomplishing what they told me I could accomplish. I feel great about that. Maybe I want to accomplish more. Maybe I want to accomplish faster, right? The big paradigm, I think, in what I'm describing, and that's all I think you should kind of leapfrog on this, but the big paradigm that I'm describing right now is the most effective schools with high-level programs, let's just say upgrade programs as just a generality. The ones who are the most successful, the most effective, are the ones who have students who, like, are coming to you wanting to be in this thing. This isn't something that you can go strong-arm all your students into. It's not about doing a bait-and-switch sale. It's not about high-pressuring someone until they give you a bigger check, right? None of that works. Well, let me say it this way. That works, but only for a short period of time, right? If you want to be in this business for 20, 30, 40 years, like obviously what you've created and what others have created in similar stances, they have to want what you have to offer. They have to be coming to you saying, hey, Mr. Jones, I feel so great about what I've accomplished in the program so far. I've seen this leadership program, and I've heard a little bit about it. This might be something I'm interested in. What's that all about? How does that work, right? Does that make sense? So as a paradigm, I think that's pretty important. Mashal, what would you – I see that mistake an awful lot. They think that in many cases this is about trying to, like, bully somebody into moving up, right? And that just never works long term.
Well, and even the terminology that we're using, I mean, let's be clear. When you're talking to your staff, you can say selling from the floor, and it is for us as owners, it's a very clear idea and a very clear vision of what we're doing. But many martial artists, unfortunately, are very, self-righteous about the business aspect of what we're doing. And in most cases, I think inappropriately so, but you've got to recognize that. And you've got to be constantly talking to your staff about our mission, our commitment, our moral obligation. is to have every student who comes in the school eventually become a black belt and achieve all of the great benefits that we ourselves accomplished from martial arts and from the process, and in fact make it more powerful and more compelling than what we went through. And then to move them to second degree and third degree black belt and have it become a lifetime commitment. And so the conversation is constantly about, we have a moral obligation, we have an ethical obligation, we have promised the student and the parents that we're going to do everything we can to help them get to black belt and beyond and be incredibly successful in martial arts and to achieve all the benefits that we ourselves achieved. And if we don't do all of the pieces that are required to help them visualize it, motivate themselves to accomplish that outcome in their own life and in their own training, that we've let them down. So it's got to be constant having that conversation with the staff. And then it's got to be recognizing that just like any other activity that any human being gets involved with, without long-term goals, it fizzles out pretty quick. And so we've got to be helping them set that goal and make that commitment and understanding, you know, not the details of the process, but the, you know, the reason for making the commitment to begin with.
Yeah, it goes. Now, here's the part that unfortunately a lot of folks in our industry won't resonate with. But it really is about leadership. It's about leading your staff. It's about leading your organization, right? About leading your team, whether it's one person, whether it's yourself, or a team of staff members, right? You have to play the role of managing their belief structure, right? You can't neglect that. You can't just think it's only about the technical. You know, I always go back to, you know, the Taekwondo guys versus the Tung Sudo guys or whatever, right? The traditional Japanese styling. And you'll have one camp who will argue, spit, fight, punch, kick, you know, and threaten if you tell them that you should chamber your hand by your belt rather than your rib, or vice versa, right? And you know, I've heard the arguments on both sides of the fence, and I believe both. I think it's, you know, I think chambering by the hip, that's where power comes from. That makes sense to me. The chambering by the rib makes a straight line to the solar plexus. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. I like that too, right? But so I think that we're taught all too often in our martial arts training to we're taught the reason we should believe something, right? We're taught the reason that we should believe chambering by the rib is the right answer. Or we're taught the reason we should believe chambering by the hip is the right answer. But we forget to teach that belief. We forget to break it down that transparently to our staff members. We sometimes think about the technical, about, well, we're going to send the good job note. Johnny, if you're going to help out with class, you've got to send a good job note at the end of the class. Well, see, that's good, but that's kind of like teaching chambering by the rib just because I said so. Instead, we have to sort of take that next step with our staff and really manage their beliefs, teach them why it's so important. Like what you said, we're responsible for this student's long-term outcome. We're responsible for this student's future. What can we do in every class to make sure that we're helping with that?
And using the example you used of you know, that little technical squabble, is most martial artists have been taught over the years that having a high dropout rate means that you have high standards. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely not, you know, not the case. They've been taught that having a low number of people who get the black belt means that you're, you know, rougher, tougher, meaner, nastier than the next guy. Or that having a long-term process to get there is somehow indicative of quality. And, you know, if we were to evaluate the high school in downtown Denver, downtown Orlando, or anywhere else, and we were to say that it has a 40% graduation rate, what we're doing is being very highly critical of that high school. If we were to evaluate a college and say that it has a 70% graduation rate, we're saying that it's mediocre. And so we've been taught backwards in our industry how to think about that. You know, we don't say Harvard's a bad school, but it has a 96% graduation rate. And the best high school, the one, you know, use the analogy, if you're paying $30,000 a year for private tuition, it's the best in the city, it better have nearly 100% graduation rate, or else it doesn't fit the qualification. In fact, it better have nearly 100% that go on to an Ivy League or comparable school.
Yeah. And it's not about watering down the system. It's not about creating lower quality bike builds. It's the opposite of that. But let me move back around to, you know, because we're still sort of in that mode of how do we keep that communication process open to the student from the floor, et cetera. And, you know, I mentioned the good job node concept and the system for that. Well, you know, with today's technology, there's another leverage opportunity there where, obviously, you know, sending the handwritten live stamp good job note builds, especially handwritten with the assistant instructor or the senior instructor, whoever the case may be, whoever actually taught that class is a really useful person to do that. Nothing beats that personal touch, right? Nothing can beat the personalization of someone sitting down and handwriting a note, right? Now, I will say, though, with today's technology and social media being what it is, et cetera, you know, doing an electronic version of that in addition is also a good idea. So, you know, shoot him a quick email that says, hey, you know, Johnny in class accomplished this. You know, and they have to make it exactly specific. They have to tell them exactly what Johnny did and why it was important for them to write the note. So, you know, Johnny today was working on his form, and he's been struggling with that a little bit, but I saw him today, you know, kind of grit his teeth and really persevere through it, and you know, he made forward movement in his, you know, his determination to make sure that he accomplished that goal today, right? So that's what the note has to say. Now, so you send it, mail it. We also would email that to them and give them a little share link so that they can share it up on Facebook or Twitter. Maybe instead of an email, we shoot a little quick video with our flip camera, and we upload that to YouTube, and we send the parent the link to the YouTube video with the little share buttons down below that they can share that video with their friends on Facebook and Twitter and MySpace or whatever, right? So now you're kind of using that also as a referral mechanism that a guest or a friend of that person could click the link and go back to your site and be opted in or whatever, right? So the thing I would be very cautious of automating and systemizing that stuff with technology is very useful. However, I still believe that the handwritten note, maybe even with a gift card, like you said, the Starbucks gift card stuck in it, or, you know, whatever, maybe, I think that's irreplaceable. I think you can augment and enhance it with technology. I think that's very useful. But the parent knowing that someone sat down with a pen and wrote something to them, you know, I think that's extremely important. So,
yeah, Tim Kovar and I had that conversation many years ago now, and I remember one of the things that he did, and of course the technology wasn't where it's at now, but he had this spreadsheet of all the different contact points where the students were automatically going to get a letter, in this case from his brother Dave, who was, you know, the martial arts figurehead. And so it was, you know, every belt and every, you know, I forget what his spreadsheet was, but I mean, it included a personalized mail merge, personally signed letter at every belt graduation, and there were a bunch of other benchmarks. And he had said to me that it was an awful lot of work, and they were also doing little personal notes for special accomplishments, a variety of other things, and he had thought about getting rid of it. And then they did a little outreach, and he showed up at a couple of students' houses to congratulate them for something. And he remembered specifically they was walked into a little seven-year-old bedroom by the parents, and on the kid's wall, on the bulletin board, was the 10 little notes that had been sent from Dave, as well as the little handwritten notes. And, you know, it just anchored in for him how important. And, you know, especially if you're talking about a child, they don't often get mail addressed to them. And that's, I think, an important consideration is if it's for a child, you should be periodically sending notes to the parents and periodically sending notes to the kids. Separately. If it's an adult, nowadays, you know, I don't know, I get 250 emails a day, and that's after spam arrest caught 1,000 of them. An email doesn't mean much, especially if it could be perceived as being mail merged, but a little handwritten note, you know, I rarely get one of those. I periodically get the send out cards thing, you know, which is kind of like the pretend fake personalized card. And I pay a lot more attention to that and still open them up, even though I know it could have been 500 people got it. as opposed to an email or somebody posted on my Facebook or something like that. So you've got to realize just how important those little personal touches are.
Exactly. Well, and again, the paradigm for today is you know, selling from the floor. So each of those touches, the person writing the note has to really know that, you know, the objective is that person sees progress, that person is basically, quote-unquote, sold on the idea of being a black belt long-term, of being consistent with their training, of becoming a great black belt, not just a regular black belt, you know, whatever, right? It's extremely important that everybody's on mission, right? You don't want to have any disconnected mission members, you know, staff members out there who don't really understand what you're trying to accomplish long term. So I think that all that's really important. Now, you mentioned a couple things, and you know, maybe it's worth expanding on, but there are things in the classroom. Okay.
Just before you do that, let's make explicit what's been implicit in our conversation so far. Is, you know, like one of the examples we used was a few months ago, I stepped in one of the schools and somebody wrote me a check for, I don't know what it was, $27,800, something like that. I think it was $27,600. See, explicitly what we're saying is that nobody writes you a big check like that if they don't think you like them, if they don't like you, if they don't feel comfortable in your presence, and they don't truly believe you have their long-term best interests at heart. And everything else is detail, right? And so explicitly what we're saying is, no matter how many times I have them do black belt jumping jacks, and no matter how many times I, you know, talk to them about black belt on the floor, if they don't sincerely like you, sincerely like your staff, feel like you have their sincere best interests at heart, none of this stuff, you know, nothing else works. And so I think it's very important for us to point out that we're not on a different topic. We're not talking about retention versus renewals. We're talking about the whole renewal process and how important it is that level of rapport and that sincere liking and that sincere level of respect for you as an individual exists.
Yeah, if it's disingenuous, it will be perceived as being disingenuous. And the opposite is true as well. If it's sincere, it'll be perceived as being sincere because everything's sort of aligned with that. You know, it can't be, you know, I have this, you know, kind of crappy classroom where we beat the hell out of the students and we really don't care if they show up or not. But my attendance system knows that if they don't swipe their card in a week, they get an email, right? I mean, that just doesn't, you know, it's a disconnected culture. And I think that was, you know, what you were saying originally about that it has to be a culture from the top down. I think that's extreme. That's the most important piece of it, right? So again, I mean, I think that as far as mechanical things go, what are some examples of the things that your folks are doing? Yeah, I've got a lot of examples, but on the floor specifically that reinforce moving to the next level.
Well, let me start by going through some of the ones I mentioned already. Some of them pretty quickly is doing goal setting about black belt. And in the context of teaching goal setting, using this as an example of the goal setting. But at the same time, really making sure that you're walking them through specifically why they should set a goal to black belt. And you know, as you've taught many times, Toby, is that people go through a cycle of, you know, are you real? Are you a real person? Are you sincere? Number two is what you're talking about, has it truly happened for other people? Next, has it truly happened for other people who are like I am, right? ADD in the case of a kid, or mildly autistic, or 39-year-old out of shape, whatever it might be. And then is it realistic for it to happen to me, and then will I, in fact, follow through and be able to do this? They've got to go through that cycle. And so we do goal setting, but we also do social proof. So showing them the other people who've achieved their black belt, showing them what they were like when they were a white belt. And one of the things I always try to get the instructors to do is as black belts, as school owners, people tend to perceive us as superhuman. I personally, I'll be in front of a group and I'll talk about the fact that, you know, when I was 9 years old, I was going to beat up by the neighborhood bully, and I was in braces from the hips down, and then in corrective shoes, and was, you know, the last one picked for any sports activities. And, you know, it's all about making you be them or worse when you started. Not about you've always been superhuman and always walked on water and, you know, and got it from the guru sitting on top of the mountain. Because if that's the way it's perceived by them, then they go through that thing of, can I do it? And, you know, the answer is, well, no, because my child already has little ADD, or he's a little awkward, and I can't see him being a blind belt because, for God's sake, he can't even play soccer, right? So I think that's a key component. And the more you layer on, one of the things we've always done is these, you know, what I've achieved in martial arts, what I've learned from martial arts essays for the black belts. Well, we've got hundreds of them now, and we'll bundle up stacks of them and give them to parents to be reading on the sidelines, so that they get a sense of what other people have accomplished. And we'll have parents stand up of a seven-year-old and adults for themselves and say, well, you know, what were you like as a white belt? What did you find the process was? Were you, you know, were you concerned about whether you were going to be able to accomplish it or not, in order to give them those references so that they believe that not only have other people, in fact, achieved the benefits we're talking about, but that they themselves in their situation can do it, and to show them that, that they will.
Yeah, you know, I think what would be useful for everybody, by the way, if you go to the NAMA member section on the homepage, it's one of the featured articles for this month. We put up there your renewal DVD, right? And basically, it reinforces the sounds of success from this month, last month, the one you've just received, and. Basically, that's exactly what you just described. It's basically a testimonial reel, but it's sort of cut like an infomercial. But it really is heartfelt success stories, you know, exactly what these parents have been through, what they've accomplished, what their children have accomplished through the program. And what you should pay attention to there is how, you know, unscripted and from the heart it all sounds, because frankly it is. And the other piece of it is they do a very good job of telling their story in terms that another parent would resonate with. Things like, you know, my son was so uncoordinated and clumsy, and we really didn't think he could do this. But here's what we found. You know, it's the whole feel, felt, found thing. And that, in someone else's words, is so much more powerful than coming in your own words. And I just recommend that everybody goes back to the member site and review that. That entire video is up there. So you can take a look at it and just kind of, you know, take some notes on what types of specific success stories were used in that. It's very well orchestrated, very well done. I mean, it was a ton of money in production, but the big deal is that this is the type of thing that you can do either static in class. You can have parents just stand up directly and tell their story. I know one of the mechanisms I always used to keep people moving into leadership was I'd have like every couple of weeks a leadership seminar, some type of a special activity at the school. And I would invite, you know, all the leadership students to come, but I would also have, you know, 10 or 15 leadership prospects, people who are just enrolled in my orientation program. And I would, you know, do a few exercises or whatever, a few activities. And then we'd have parents of the existing leadership students, black belts and so forth, literally stand up in the class and tell their story, you know. And, you know, have all the students sit over by the feet of the parents, and now you've got about half of the room are people who aren't in your leadership program yet, and half of the of the room are, and you have three or four of the people who are going to sing your praises, stand up and literally do it live. And nothing's more powerful than them, right? I mean, nothing's more powerful than them seeing an example of them accomplishing what it is you say you can do, right?
Yeah. So, well, and there's no excuse nowadays for not having live written testimonials, video testimonials, and, you know, I think video is much more powerful than written or audio. But, you know, the closer you get, you know, having an audio recording is better than just in writing. And with, you know, nowadays, you know, you can carry your Android phone, your iPhone, your flip camera, your little Kodak camera. And last time we did an intramural here, is I just put one of the 30-something young ladies who wasn't able to participate because she had broken her foot, and had her hobbling around to the black belts and the parents and asking them like three simple questions. You know, what has karate done for you, and would you recommend Mile High Karate, and what are the three major reasons that you think somebody should do this? And suddenly we had 150, and I told her I wanted them to be between 2 and 3 minutes. So suddenly we had, you know, over 100 clips of black belts and their parents doing little testimonials unprompted randomly. And, you know, we're using them for everything from search engine optimization to emailing the link to, you know, to parents sequentially to validate what we're doing.
Yeah, it's super easy, and it just takes a little bit of focus. But again, the whole deal is this is something that the staff, your staff members, your instructors have to be intimately involved in. I mean, well, they don't have to be. They only have to be if you want to be good at this. If you want to be really successful at moving people to the next level, or moving them to making a, you know, to being a long-term black belt. So it's all about that holistic thing. I mean, it really is a one system thing. It's not a disconnected process. I think that's the most important thing, you know, for our purposes today. But hey, Marshall, we're running pretty quickly out of time here. You know, you and I are getting ready to get on a plane to go to D.C. like tomorrow.
Yep.
And spend a couple of days up there with school owners in the Northeast. And then we're actually we've got five more stops this year for the
if you live out there, you actually refer to it, I think, as the Mid-Atlantic.
Mid-Atlantic. Everything north of east. Everything from east north something. So we're in D.C. this weekend, and then we'll be in Houston and Atlanta. We'll be in Toronto, Canada, and then
first that you skipped is we'll be in Los Angeles.
Right.
So
exactly.
we'll be in Washington D.C. this weekend, and this is going to be an interesting one because we have bonus sessions with Jeff Smith and June Reese, since they're both in D.C. and you know, my instructors. But then we'll be in Los Angeles, 2.5 weeks from now.
Right.
And then go ahead, right ahead, Toby. I didn't mean to interrupt that, but
that's where I was going. Yeah, so September 24th, we're in Los Angeles, and then we're making four or five more stops this year: Houston, Atlanta, Toronto, and then early next year we're in Atlantic City. So we've got a bunch of these stops coming up, and they're really, really, really useful. And you know, one of the things that we're going to do, and I think that's really useful for everybody, is we know that there is such a disconnect between just receiving information and implementing, right? So this is one of the purposes for what we're doing, and we really want to grow the industry as a whole, right? And there really is some significant enough disconnects that we believe that we actually have to go do it, right? We have to actually go there and help these guys on a regionalized basis, help school owners on a regionalized basis. So if you or your association members, if you're part of a martial arts association, or you know, you have people that you go to tournaments with, or other school owners who really could benefit from this type of a process. And basically what this is we put, you know, 40, 50 school owners in a room together, we lock the door, and we walk them through, you know, the core systems that they need to really run a professional business. The more professionalized the industry is, the more professional schools are, the better we'll all do, the better every school will do. Because our enemy is schools who are in our industry who screw up the perception of the public.
Yeah.
Meaning they're out there, exactly, they're out there, you know, taking the money and running, or they're being abusive to students, and they're teaching students that are seven-year-old things that are inappropriate for seven-year-olds to learn, right? You know, things like that. And we really need, unfortunately, for them to go away. And I believe that the economy has helped that along considerably. But what we really need is anyone who's willing, anyone who really wants to operate a professional business, we want to eliminate the barriers for them to be able to do that. So that's really the reasoning for this regional tour. We're coming to, you know, probably 12 markets by this time next year, maybe more. And we really want to, on a regionalized basis, help elevate the standards for that, for our industry in that area. So if, again, if you have people that are in your martial arts association or school owners who you see at tournaments and compete with or whatever the case may be, if they're people of good character, then, you know, just like in your martial arts school, the best compliment a student can pay is to refer a friend to your school, right? Well, it's sort of the same thing in NATMA as well. The stronger we are as a whole, the more professional schools we have working together, the better it will be for everyone. So if you have folks that, you know, again, are in your martial arts association or you go to tournaments with or just friends of yours that you know, you are cooperative, competitive with, whatever the case may be, you know, I'll send you a link and things like that. But if you invite them to come to the seminar, you know, perhaps come along with them, bring a few staff members. These are really things that are going to help us elevate the industry as a whole. So in the next few days, you'll be getting some information about that.
And many of our Inner Circle members have found it extremely valuable to load up their staff and, you know, and drive 3, 4, 5 hours or take a short flight to be at one of these things. And you know, so many times it's, you get your staff there and they meet us and they hear the message directly. They then pay attention to what you've been trying to get them to do all along. And it's a, you know, it's a frustrating syndrome, but Tim Gober and I used to joke that, you know, I fly to Sacramento once a week and do his staff training. He'd fly to Denver once a week and do my staff training because they all listened to him when he came out, and his guys all listened to me when I went out. And you can't underestimate the value of that third-person expert experience, assuming it's the right message, and, you know, this certainly will be.
Absolutely. And again, you know, we're kind of doing this on the regional. We're coming anywhere near you, you know. This is the opportunity to kind of jump on that. And again,
or if the only date that works for you is across the country, I mean, it gives you flexibility as opposed to just one big time as well. So that's the other thing to consider.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, that really is, by the way, the more rationale for why we're spending so much time on planes over the next 12 months is, you know, we love doing the big events. Our members love them. We can really accomplish a lot in 3 or 4 days, putting everybody in a room. But there are so many schools that, you know, the schedule doesn't work for them, or it's not feasible for them to travel for 3 or 4 days, close the school down for 3 or 4 days. So this is really sort of an answer to that. But and again, we're also expanding the courses that our attendees will get with folks like Ryan Tracy and Anthony Robbins and Larry Donathan here, a bunch of really high power strategy for them that accomplishes sort of sweeping paradigm change, if that's what they really need to take their business to the next level. So it's really useful. You'll be getting information over the next couple of days on that. Again, if you've got folks who would be useful, who really need help, who can sort of help us keep the industry moving forward rather than sort of slipping backwards over time, they'd be great folks to invite. And, of course, that helps us just make the association stronger, make the industry stronger in general. So I think it's useful on both ends. So,
before we run out of time, remind everybody of the URL, because we've got some time slotted aside, and as you know, it's going to be increasingly more difficult to get it. But some time slotted aside for me to do one-on-one evaluations with schools, and we've got a little 90-minute video clip from one of the seminars that everybody who's viewed it has found extremely valuable, as well as the gift of a free copy of my book. What is that URL again, Toby? It's natma.com/member-bonus. Is that right?
No, a private coaching session.
Oh, okay.
So
all one word.
natma.com/private coaching session. And there's just a little application process you can do online, and we can get you all set up with that.
Yeah, we only ask you to jump through a couple, you know, minor hoops, which is, you know, read through the book and go through the little online video so we're on the same page. And, you know, so many of the schools I've talked to, I won't say all, but most of them, you know, just in one or two conversations, we can find a missing $10,000 or $20,000 a month. And you know, extra $200,000 or $300,000 a year. extrapolated out by oftentimes some minor tweaks or some major implementation changes to really grow the school, you know, to a huge level in 2011, 2012. Well, good. I know we're out of time.
Exactly right. Yeah, our thing's going to cut us off in a second. So thanks, guys, so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And we'll have this call up online probably in, you know, 4 or 5 days. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody out in Washington, D.C.
And let's encourage everybody to send questions that they may have had on the topic. Email them to you or me, CobyMilroy@atma.com or StephenOliver@atma.com. And that way we can address them immediately next time, or even better, post them in the discussion forum, and we'll get an interchange of ideas that have been resonated from selling from the floor or anything else we talked about today.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, everybody. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Thank you, sir.